You're listening to the Art Problems Podcast, episode 54. I'm your host, Patty Johnson. This is the podcast where we talk about how to get more shows, grants, and residencies. And today, I wanted to revisit a conversation we began on this podcast about a year ago, how to use artificial intelligence. Last year, I concluded that the biggest problem related to AI as it pertains to artists and to the larger culture has to do with the issue of plagiarism, and also that AI was not going to help artists write their artist statements just yet. So a year later, it seems like a check-in is in order. What's changed? And it turns out that quite a lot has changed. Yet in some ways, nothing at all. So plagiarism and copyright infringement remains a hugely contested issue, and there are multiple lawsuits currently in the court. I'm not a lawyer, and there's so much detail that needs consideration when it comes to copyright that I'm not sure getting into all the ins and outs of these cases is really going to be the best use of our time here. But all that said, a couple of points came up in a Hard Fork podcast interview with the lawyer, Rebecca Tushnet, that I wanted to tease out because these issues are really relevant to artists. So in a conversation about the lawsuit, Anderson et al. Versus Stability AI et al., where most of the artist infringements claims, this is Anderson, who is the artist who is claiming infringements, most of those were dismissed because the artist didn't have the copyright. And in that case, I learned that even Tushnet, who is generally sympathetic to artist concerns, doesn't see a lot of issues with the copyright law as it stands. Tushnet has represented a lot of individuals writing fan fiction, so she's generally on the side of the little guy, which I like. Now, to frame the conversation, I think it's useful to explain the position of the software companies as it pertains to copyright. And in general, the software company's position for liability here is, hey, we just make the tools, we don't control how somebody uses it. And some of those cases will include copyright infringement and others won't. Now, to me, this is an argument for regulation, you know, and we see other industries where there isn't a lot of regulation and the type of harm that can occur as a result. So gun companies, for example, aren't liable for what people do with their guns, but they should be liable if they sell them to people intending to, say, murder people, right? So one of the things that we've been working on in this country is making sure that it's harder for people with a history of violence and mental illness to get a hold of guns. You know, I think extending this out, I just want to ask the question, you know, do we really think it's okay to use AI to do things like render explicit images of Taylor Swift that then go viral, right? One artist inside the membership told me that there's an AI rendered image online that uses her work, but in a way that she'd never say is okay. And it's kind of stuck there. Now, the minute something goes viral, it becomes very difficult to remove online. And that can be really damaging to an artist. So that's one sort of chunk of this issue that I want us to be considering. Outside of the suit, but also I think very relevant to digital artists who use AIs like prompt engineers, Tushnet explored the questions of prompts and whether those are copyrightable. Tushnet says no. You know, the rationale here is that because you can get a choice of multiple outputs that are quite different, that the prompt itself can never be specific enough to qualify as human output. She also had questions about the iterations that you reject. Who owns them? Are they still yours? And I think these are really good questions. But I also think that in this case, she fundamentally misunderstands the artistic practice. The fact that there are multiple versions, the very fact that those versions exist, suggests a human-like process. What artists do is they determine the value of the material they're using, right? That's a fundamentally human process. It's a fundamentally creative process, and it's one that can't be outsourced. No matter how good AI gets, the machine is going to give you information that you want, and it will give the tools to interpret value. But ultimately, you are the one that decides on that value. And that is the creative process at play right here. But the big takeaway I took as it related to the problem of copyright and how difficult this is to solve came from this Tushnet analogy. She said, giving individual artists more copyright rights is like giving your kids more lunch money when the bullies take it at lunch. The bullies will take all the money that you have to give. In other words, you can't solve a problem of economic structure by handing out licenses to someone who doesn't have market power to exercise. The publisher is still going to say, if you want to publish with me, you're going to give me all the rights, and you will still say, I'd love to be in print. So you'll do that, right? So the conversation should be more around how we can pay artists rather than thinking about how we can fix that with AI. I wouldn't 100% agree with this. And if I'm being honest, I don't even know where to start. And I'm not sure that anyone else does either. Like the New York Times is suing OpenAI and Microsoft for copyright infringement for using their paper to train AIs. The Getty has a lawsuit out as well in very similar terms. These are big companies that are actually relatively small compared to the AI companies they're suing. And in this scenario, the New York Times is the kid being bullied. There's, you know, hardly any kids left on the playground to help with that suit because the publishing industry has really been decimated. But my hope, anyway, is that they are awarded money because I don't see how we can afford to have anyone make content to train these systems without those people getting paid. So I think that's really, really important. Now, these questions come up all the time inside the network membership and even on AI-related posts that are more practical in nature. So when I started using the AI search engine Perplexity a couple weeks ago, I made a post about how much better I thought it was with artist statements than ChatGPT. And on Network, we had a whole discussion that ranged from practical use cases to the ethical dilemmas posed by these types of AI products. Now, one of the reasons I like Perplexity so much better than anything else I've used is that it footnotes all the sources for me. Now, I complained about this in my first podcast on this subject last year, episode 12, for your reference, that when I plug something into ChatGPT, I wouldn't get these footnotes. Footnoting is critical. Every source has a bias, so you need to know where that information comes from so you know how to interpret it. But also, AIs are known for making up information. This is something that the tech world calls hallucinations. So it's hard to feel safe if I'm not using something like Perplexity that gives me the sources. And I want to say that at this point, I'm actually trying to wean myself off Google. You know, you get so used to using certain tools that it becomes, the muscle memory is ingrained. So it becomes hard to wean yourself off. But I want to do that because Perplexity is like a 1,000 times better. So it's hard to find anything you want using Google or virtually anything else now because it's so littered with ads and I don't know what they did with their algorithm. It's also now using AI, which I think just really doesn't work that well. So for example, yesterday, I was trying to find a very specific probiotic and I got a million sponsored results. And even the results that weren't sponsored came back and they gave me something very close to what I was looking for, but I had a very specific formulation. And I know that I can put these, you know, this formulation in quotes and all the rest, and it wasn't working. I was still getting things that were omitting the very specific formulation that I was looking for. There's only one product on Amazon that had this formulation. Was in the small print, and none of the Google or Amazon searches found it. I got a lot of similar products through the sponsored posts, but not the actual thing I was looking for. But Perplexity found the exact product I wanted, and in a fraction of the time. I think I needed to like narrow the search just once. This is how Google is supposed to work, but doesn't. Perplexity is actually built off ChatGPT technology, but I've found that it's better for a lot of things. And I've found that it's also better at improving artist statements. But what's even better for artist statements is the AI product Claude. This is something that's put out by Anthropic. You can use the free version. That's what I did. And it works really well. So what I wanted to do right now is take a look at that improvement. Because last year, I gave ChatGPT the following prompt. I make abstract weavings on canvas using oil paint as thread. Usually, a simple shape or pattern emerges. Please write me an artist statement. This is what ChatGPT made for me last year.
As an artist, my focus is on creating abstract weavings on canvas using oil paint as thread. Through the manipulation of color and texture, I aim to create simple shapes and patterns that evoke a sense of movement and energy. I find inspiration in the natural world, particularly in the way that light and shadow play across surfaces. My work is an exploration of the interplay between form and color, and I hope that it encourages the viewer to see the world in a new and dynamic way.
Okay, this is a terrible statement because it's generic and makes up influences that I didn't specify. Here's what the paid ChatGPT version wrote for me today.
In my art, I explore the convergence of weaving and painting by using oil paint as thread on canvas to create abstract compositions. This unique approach allows me to build layers of color and texture that subtly form simple shapes and patterns, inviting viewers to experience the familiar art of weaving transformed into a dynamic visual medium. Each piece challenges the traditional boundaries of both mediums, offering a fresh perspective on abstraction and the tactile interplay between structure and spontaneity.
Okay, so in my opinion, terminology like dynamic visual medium sounds a little bullshitty, but I think we can all agree that this is an improvement on last year's statement. It is more specific. Now, let's take a look at what Claude did with my prompt.
My artistic practice centers on the construction of intricate, abstract woven compositions entirely built from the medium of oil paint. Embracing paint's malleable, structural properties, I meticulously weave fluid lines and intersections across the canvas, imbuing the work with a distinctive physicality and materiality. Simple geometric shapes and rhythmic patterns gradually emerge through this improvisational process as I follow the organic flow of the paint. The resulting paintings exist in a liminal space, balancing deliberate design with a sense of discovery, inviting the viewer to contemplate the interplay of color, texture, and the inherent materiality of the painting itself.
This is a statement that incorporates the stylistic preferences of the art world, and it's pretty good. Is it perfect? No, it's generic. But it's generic because the prompt is generic. And it brings up an issue that Ethan Mollick, a professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, discussed on the Ezra Klein Show recently. He describes AIs as good assistants. But in areas where you have less expertise, they're likely to be less helpful because you don't have the skills to assess their accuracy. So, meaning if you feel like you're not a great writer, this can get you started, but it may not get you all the way. Moreover, if you're not pushing your art and your ideas, it's not going to be able to fill that in for you. And that brings me back to the original point, which is while there are a lot more practical applications for AIs than there were a year ago, one thing that won't transform is what you bring to the work. All the ideas and critical thinking that we use to build a practice that is distinct from everyone else is still required. And that's a good thing because it means that the work we do will always have purpose. All right, that's it for today. I'll see you back here next week. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, please leave a review and share it with a friend. It really helps get that valuable information out to more artists just like you. You can find all of the names and the links that we reference in this conversation at workshop.art/podcast.